CliffCentral.com.
All right, Michael Apple is with ENCA, and he has been on the Burning Platform before. It's a great pleasure and privilege to have him join us this morning. Burning Platform brought to you by Nando's. We check in on some of the current affairs stories in the news, the stuff everybody wants to talk about. And luckily for you, we've got lots of things to talk about this morning. Michael, good morning.
Hey.
How are you? Hello?
I'm very well, and you, Gareth?
Good. Who were you talking to before I came to you?
Oh, nobody. Just
oh, okay.
You.
All right. It sounded like you had a whole conversation going on
there. I was talking to my computer.
Oh, shame. I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to interrupt you two in a romantic moment.
No, that's all right.
All right. So, Michael, first of all, thanks for joining us this morning. You've done this before, so you know the rap. We just try to give everybody an idea of what's going on in the world, especially in politics, which can be very confusing. Someone said to me the other day, and I thought it was a clever comment, if the ANC could run on hypocrisy, we wouldn't need Eskom.
Yes. Yes. It's the talking one direction, walking the other that
yeah.
they've become specialists at.
They're really good at it. And President Cyril Ramaphosa said this week, and I thought it was a nice thing for him to say. Of course, I don't know whether he's going to follow through with it or not. But this very hypocrisy we're talking about, they're going to do lifestyle audits on all the government officials. Now, what does that mean?
So, if this sounds like deja vu, it's because it rightfully is. And it's mm-hmm. it's something that was called for 8 years ago when Zweling Zimavavi was still heading up COSATU. And that was when Jacob Zuma was at the helm. And they're basically supposed to go through their bank statements and see where they derive all their money from. So SARS would need to... To be functioning efficiently for this, they'd have to be cooperation.
This is all in a day's work for SARS. They shouldn't have any problem doing this. They could probably do it in a week.
Yeah, of course, of course. So, you know, if SARS is efficiently functioning and effective, they should be able to work with them to check what is in the annually disclosed in terms of their. The benefits and the money and the financial statements, and does it match up? And then look at their lifestyles, literally the houses they live in, the cars they drive, what they disclose as gifts, and do the two add up? But the problem I've always had with announcing lifestyle audits is similar to the National Police Commissioner announcing a new crime-fighting strategy. So it's all fine and well announcing it to the media, but... Gee, I think the unintended consequence, and I don't think it takes a rocket scientist for this, is you're also announcing it to the criminals. So you're telling these people that we are going to be looking into your financial affairs, and it won't happen.
Tidy up.
Yeah, exactly. So they, and it's also a healthy dose of skepticism here. We're coming up to an election year. It's a great way to sound like you're enforcing accountability without actually doing anything.
Well, I'm always concerned. We seem in South Africa to expect a certain level of, let me think about it, superiority and an attitude of superiority from our politicians. Nobody seems to bat an eyelid when they go past us on the highway with the blue light brigade and 17 cars in their retinue, that they live in state housing, that they get paid a salary over and above all of that with very few expenses because the government pays for most of what they do, including clothing budgets and travel allowances and petrol and security details and all the stuff that the rest of us have to pay out of our own pockets for. They seem to me to live a pretty good life, politicians. Would you say that compared to, I don't know, other countries that call themselves democracies, South Africa's politicians live well?
Yes, I think that's a fair comment. I think the houses they live in, the cars they drive, if you just look at the budgets that they allocate towards the vehicles, the Q7s, the X3s, the X5s, 2 million rand vehicles that they're driving around in, they've got 24-hour security, they've got bodyguards. As you say, they have so many perks and benefits that there is a general understanding and expectation that when you become – and I think it's a misnomer, a public servant, that it equals a life of luxury. When in the real world, in many democracies, that's not what it's supposed to equal. You're supposed to continue being a servant. It's not supposed to be a one-way ticket to becoming an instant millionaire.
Well, we'll hold our breaths to see whether the lifestyle audits happen. And if they do, it'll be fascinating. And if they're honest, I think we could find out some very interesting things about the way that some of our politicians live.
Yeah, and don't hold your breath for this. And the thing is, where do you start? Do you start with the SOEs, the heads of SOEs, the chairs that sit on the boards? Where do you start? Do you start with DGs? Do you start with ministers? Do you go straight to ministers in parliament? Do they go through everybody in parliament? I think the rot is so deep that it'll take 2 years to get through all the lifestyle audits.
I can't imagine a better way for SARS to spend their time, frankly, than terrorizing private citizens. They should rather spend it doing this, terrorizing the public officials who are at the spending end of what happens to tax, rather than the ones who are trying to make a living on the income side. But that's just me. Let's move on to something else, because there's quite a lot of talk around this, and I've seen noise on social media about it. There are people calling for amnesty for the Fees Must Fall activists, right? They're saying these guys should be forgiven for their protests because they are essentially political activists, and in this country we have a long history of locking people up for all the wrong reasons. But the DA has unveiled some numbers around the costs of Fees Must Fall. So I'm just going to read off some of these, and then, you know, you can give us a comment on it if you've got some. 45 million rand at CPUT, 47 million rand at TUT, 2.5 million rand at UCT. This is obviously damage and security and things that the universities and the state has had to pay for as a result of the Fees Must Fall protests, which means that these are costs that come out of providing education to people, the very thing that the Fees Must Fall activists were trying to achieve. 2.5 million UCT, 4.8 million at Fort Hare, 144 million rand at UJ, 103 million rand at the UKZN, 7 million rand in Limpopo, 7.2 million rand in UNISA, 8 million rand at Stellenbosch, 63 million rand at the University of the Western Cape, 24 million rand at VUT, and 29 million rand at WITS. All of that must add up to a very big, ugly number, which flies in the face of Fees Must Fall, because all of this means fees will have to rise.
484.5 million rand. So almost half a billion rand is what the state had to spend on this little exercise. And I was listening to Fasia Hassan, who I think back at WITS, I was there at the time of the Fees Must Fall protest. She was one of those, well, let's air quote this, activists at the time. And now she's an ANC spokesperson, and she was chatting to Karima Brown on 702 the other day about why the ANC feels that these activists should get amnesty. And they were asking for the justice minister to get involved here. But, I mean, the argument is if you're committing arson and assault, and there are several video clips of students being caught with bricks and rocks in their hands assaulting police officers. You allow this to happen, are you not setting an incredibly dangerous precedent to then argue later for other people to come and say, no, well, these guys got away with it? I think there is room for those that sort of protested peacefully, but to look at the burning of buildings and justify that later as, oh, well, you know, the ends justify the means, I think is a very slippery slope. And the justice minister has got absolutely no business getting involved in that at all. Wow. If we believe in the rule of law in this country, which I and I think many in the public would like to think we do, or at least say we do, then you cannot look at amnesty for a lot, not for all of them, but for a lot of these.
Well, if
these youngsters, you simply,
you know,
can't.
You could be an activist, but the minute you commit a crime in the common law, you're committing a crime. Burning a building, throwing a brick at a policeman, assault, destruction of property. These are things that fall well outside of what your political beliefs and the need to stand up to something tend to be. And if you're put in prison for your ideas, obviously that's wrong. All of us would stand up for you, even if we disagreed with you. But to think that you can get away with destroying stuff in the name of some cause, which ends up quite paradoxically costing the institution that you're hoping to reduce fees at, then you're not only stupid, but you need to be locked up in prison because you're a criminal.
It's completely counterintuitive, this entire process, in many instances that the fees must fall, people went
through. These are not, you know, we talk in South Africa about people who are illiterate and innumerate and can't figure out whether they got to walk forward or backward and which leg goes in front of the other or which breath to take at what point. We're talking about tertiary education institutions. We're talking about the supposedly smartest 2% of the population. That's worrying.
Yeah, it certainly is. And the space in these institutions, having attended an academic land debate at UNISA not too long ago, if that was academic, firstly, and secondly, was a debate, then I don't know where I got my qualifications, because it was a shouting fest, and he or she who shouts loudest wins. The space for intelligent, fact-based, well, debate, but argument, that space is getting smaller the more you allow people to shout down an opponent simply because you don't like their views, but you have invited them and then shout them down. It's the most confusing and annoying thing to me.
Well, it seems to me that university education, if anything, is falling. Not the fees, but the fact that you have a degree means nothing anymore, and certainly doesn't mean to people in the prospective job market that we're interested in hiring you. Because especially if you were an activist at university, you're unlikely to be valuable to my company or my business. Sorry. Anyway, the point is that these activists are now looking for a way out, because many of them found themselves in trouble. Many of them are looking for a job in politics, and this is the way to get noticed in student politics, is, as you say, to make the most noise. And for some of them, it's worked. Who's this person you spoke about who's now in the ANC?
Fasiha Hassan.
Right.
She was on the forefront.
All right.
Of the fees must fall thing at Wits. And yeah, she got scooped up, and she now is a spokesperson at the ANC. As we head into the 2019 right. elections, there is a strategy within the ANC to, obviously they've realized they've lost the youth because their youth league is non-existent. So they need to bring in younger people, people that can actually communicate with that section of society, as opposed to Pulemabe. So that's their strategy now, to bring in this fees must fall.
Good for her. She's found herself a career job in politics. That's lovely. Yeah. Terrific. Okay, Jackson McKay. Who is this Jackson McKay? Says he's never had dealings with Ashu Chawla, who facilitated many of the applications for work visas for employees at Gupta-linked companies. We know that the Department of Home Affairs seemed to have fast-tracked Gupta naturalization, and it seems to have happened in record time. We've actually got a special at 8 o'clock this morning about how difficult it is for people who want to work in South Africa to get all the required paperwork done, to be naturalized, in some cases to become citizens. It's very, very hard to do this. Not so hard if you're the Guptas. Who is this Jackson McKay?
You're going to have to forgive me there. I have been out of the country. I just got back last night. And if this has been revealed at this commission, then or in parliament, you're going to have to forgive me on that one.
Okay, well, I don't know anything more about him anyway, so let's just leave that alone. Do you know anything about this naturalization of the Guptas? Have you been paying attention to that story, or should we leave it?
I think we can leave it for the moment.
You know how refreshing that is for you to not just give an opinion like so many people in the news might? I love that you actually say, I don't know. That's great. It's the best answer I've ever heard from someone in the news. Okay. What about the Independent Commission for the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers, which means that our former president, this is a big story, our former president Jacob Zuma will continue to earn 100% of his salary of 2.98 million rand a year for as long as he lives.
Yeah, let's call it 3 million rand. And it's not necessarily uncommon, but they generally received, up until a few years ago, 75%. But then it was changed a few years ago. And this, once again, you have to question sort of walking the ANC, walking the talk. But you, I mean, everybody had to know that there was a carrot being dangled in front of Zuma if he would just simply step down on February the 14th last year. So, I mean, there had to have been, or this year, there had to have been something that he was promised. And I think this is a good example of that. And we have to think about all the expenses this man has cost, not just South Africa. I mean, he has got a heap of bills on his desk. Mm-hmm. And one would like to think that that VBS loan that was given to him, the 7.8 yeah. million rand to pay off the fire pool and the chicken coops, etc., that he still has to pay those back. But color me skeptical when I think that VBS simply gave it to him as a gift, because the repayments are quite hefty on 8 million rand loan. So on top of that, he also has cost us, what, 15.6? It could be over 16 million rand just for that one legal case, trying to get him into court for him to have his day there. So I think that 3 million rand salary that we're going to pay him for the rest of our lives, I think they were just, well, good riddance. If this is something he needs to leave office, then fine, we're going to make sure this happens for him at a later stage. And they've done that.
Yeah, it's quite scary how he also just got that loan approved, especially because 2 years ago there was no indication that he'd still be in the job or that he'd still be earning that money. And VBS Bank, obviously, since then, we know it was a complete front. There doesn't seem to have been any substance to that business whatsoever, but we'll leave it alone. You know, there's a lot that doesn't make sense in politics. We try to find reasons to explain the stuff that does, but there is a lot that falls outside of our scope of reality and what we're able to actually put into words.
Yeah, try and find the logic in a lot of decisions made on a daily basis. You're gonna knock your head against the wall repeatedly in South African political context. So, yeah, just get on with your life. That's pretty much it.
Are you paying attention to the Zondo Commission? Because I think a lot of people were excited in the first week, and it seems to have fallen off the news agenda for some people.
Yes, I was looking at it with some interest. I was looking at the whistleblowers that have been completely ostracized within their own political parties and sort of very unceremoniously moved out of their positions and fired. And so I was having a look at your fakie mentors and Thembo Masekos and Jonas and the like. But as I said, I've been overseas for a few days, so I haven't seen what's going on there at the moment.
Where were you?
I unfortunately can't disclose that.
Oh, wow. Very exciting.
Yeah, okay. You'll be able to find out in a couple of months.
Oh, you're doing a story.
Yes, I was.
Very good. All right. Well, that's an exciting thing to leave us hanging on. Thank you very much. Pleasure to speak to you, Michael. It's nice to have some insight from you, and I'm sure that there are lots of other stories that will come up in the news in the next while. We'll talk to you again soon. Good luck with that mystery story. You let us know when you're about to break it.
Much appreciated. Thanks, Gareth.
Cool. Sounds exciting. There we go. There's Michael Apple from ENCA. Cool guy to talk to, huh? Yeah. How's that? Doesn't that sound... That sounds exciting.
That mystery overseas trip. He's investigating, needs to find things out. Okay.
Well, the Burning Platform, as always, brought to you by Nando's. You can tell today's was extra hot.
Ooh.
And by the way, we have not forgotten about Justice Malala. He is coming back to South Africa to visit, not so long from now. To put it in the most hideous sentence I've ever constructed.
Not from now.
In other words, he'll be here soon.
Yes.
But we'll also check in with him from time to time in America. So if you're missing Justice Malala, don't worry. He's still going to be a part of the Burning Platform. We've just got to find times where he is up at 11 o'clock at night and other times where he's actually in South Africa. But he is in and out the whole time, so we will be able to catch up with him at some point. I thought I'd throw this in quickly. NBC Nightly News is the most watched program in America from a news point of view. 1.4 million people per show for the last 92 weeks. Yeah, there's an interesting stat.
92. That's a good, what, almost 2 years?
Yeah. So 1.4 million people watch the NBC Nightly News. Compare that to Joe Rogan's episode with Elon Musk, which I spoke about in my blog. You can find it on cliffcentral.com. 10 million views for that one episode. So don't tell me podcasting isn't a big deal. When we do the burning platform here, I wouldn't be surprised if there are more people listening to that, passing it around, farming it out, sharing the information, listening to the analysis, than there are in mainstream media paying attention to that news. They'll say they have X number of listeners. How many people are actually paying attention to it? That's the difference.
Average on NBC is 1.4 million.
Average of one episode, of course it was Elon Musk, so it was a good episode, 10 million views and growing, by the way.
I managed to get through all of it yesterday. It is such a good interview. It's hard to listen to in places, but it's so interesting in various other ones.
Yeah. Well, this Elon Musk is a very strange guy. He's just very odd.
He is, yeah. He is. He's just, he's very different.
I like listening to him.
The stoner purists are very upset, though. They're saying Elon did not inhale smoke.
Because it's about them, these stoners. It's all about them.
Everybody's obsessed with what Elon Musk was doing with the joint, which is about two seconds of the whole podcast. He's not even a weed smoker. He said it himself. He said, "I don't normally smoke weed." He said he hasn't had one in ages. It's amazing what gets people fired up, huh? They're all excited. It's like if you remember when you were primary school, someone found a picture of a naked girl. Woo! It was the most exciting thing ever. For about 10 seconds, that's your obsession was this. Like, people are obsessed with the fact that he smoked a joint. It's legal in California. It's not a big deal. Two consenting adults sitting in a room talking shit, and the one guy says to the other guy, "Do you want to smoke this joint with me?" He says, "Sure." That is not the most interesting thing about that discussion. And I've also listened to it.
Plenty of interesting planned stuff.
Oh, by the way, I must just also throw this in. That 10 million views is only on YouTube. We're not talking about the podcast downloads, which is probably more than that because people like to listen. They can do other things while they're listening. You guys know that because you listen to podcasts already. But for the dummies who haven't figured that out yet, that's why podcasts work. So it's probably double that, maybe a little more.
Look, and there'll be people who say, well, on YouTube, it might be one person who watches it three times.
Right.
Even if you were to deduct 3 million views off that 10 million, it's still a very substantial number.
Right.
Mm.
But there's an interesting statistic to show you how the media landscape has changed. I mean, I don't even know who's listening to radio anymore. Do you know people who listen to radio? It's interesting. Apple has brought out a new phone. Woo!
Oh, I
saw
this.
Are you excited? It was yesterday, the big announcement. Now, normally we would cover this. We would say, this is a big story. We're excited about it today. We'd have Toby Shapshak in here. We'd be talking to Apple. We'd be, you know, getting a sample of this thing so we could all have a look. Guess what?
What?
This year's three top phones are all more expensive than last year's models. It's the biggest ever iPhone. So all it's done is got
size?
It's just got bigger.
Oh, wow.
There's nothing new.
I got the notification of the live stream and I didn't even bother.
Nah. I wouldn't have. Yeah, I knew nothing interesting would happen. Imagine, Ben, let's try to relate this to another industry. Imagine I made, let me think of something ubiquitous. Let's say I made a plate. You know, a plate that you eat off of?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
It's a great China plate. Best plate in the world. You love it. It's great quality. It shines. You can use it 1,000 times and it just continues to just be, it's clean and it's shiny and it's beautiful. And you put it on the table and everybody goes, wow, what a beautiful plate. And you never worry that it's crap and it's deteriorating and that you can't clean it properly and the germs are in it and blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
And it's at its apex for a plate. Then I say to you, we're bringing out the new plate. And you get it, and it's just an inch bigger in circumference. Wouldn't you be disappointed? Wouldn't you say...
Well, I guess your expectations are key here. you would have expectations about this plate not being that much better. But every time Apple try bring something out, they give you this impression that it's going to be absolutely incredible.
Yeah, nothing.
Ooh, they should trademark that. Absolutely.
Well, what you often get from my understanding of watching these Apple things is that you get the word improved quite a lot. So it's an improved camera, but it's got the same kind of settings. It's a improved gigahertz internal processing chip, whatever. Well, but that's who's going to really say? Well, it's not.
I'm not going to pay for the. I didn't even get the 8. I think I'm still on a 7.
No, you got the 8.
Is this the 8?
I know you always play dumb, but you know exactly you got the 8.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you got the 8 plus.
All right. So Apple's new iPhone XS, which is pronounced 10S, has a 5.8-inch screen and will be sold at the starting price of $999.
Yo.
Let's just figure that one. Where's our maths machine?
I'm
going to pull that one out of the drawer here, Sia.
Oh, no.
We've still got an old-school maths machine. Because we don't trust the new ones. You want to hear my machine? Switch
sure,
it on there.
Okay. 900.
Yeah, let's try to figure this one out. All right, everybody, we need to pull the machine out. Let's do a quick calculation here. $999 multiplied by an exchange rate of about 15. That's 15,284 Rand. Jesus. That's expensive
and
for
do
a
you
phone.
Know what? We're still going to somehow get sucked into the hype. Except you, Ben.
No, yeah. Ben doesn't. I'm willing to admit I'm a complete slave of Apple, but I'm not excited about this at all. They finally added a larger screen phone so they can directly compete with the Galaxy Note 9. That's what people are saying. So they're really just following Samsung on this. Larger screen will be very important in China to turn around the trend there because they've lost some share in recent years. Apple also introduced a lower cost 6.1-inch iPhone XR, made of aluminium. They've also got a new watch. Apple appears to be taking advantage of a strong US economy.
Yeah, like obviously the new watch seems to have better things. It's got to do with the fact that if you fall down or your heart rate becomes quite erratic, then there's a way of like getting emergency services involved.
Yeah, they've had great stories around that, people who've passed out and their watch monitors them and they're able to alert people.
What happens if you just passed out and you're drunk with your boys? And then your Apple Watch is like basically making out like you're dying.
Imagine that suddenly it calls up emergency services without you needing them. All right, well, there it is.
Slightly different, I guess.
Yeah, but it all comes back to the fact that Apple products work beautifully. They're lovely. They package fantastically well. Mm-hmm. And they're like a Taylor Swift song. If you like Taylor Swift, you like what she does. So even if it's not that great, it's fine.
Ben, your analogies this morning, to give him an extra mark.
All right. I don't know if you've been following the news, but this Me Too movement, they just keep finding new aggressors, victims, and stories.
Yeah.
You know, this Ronan Farrow, who's the guy who's really he's the spearhead. He's the guy at the forefront of these investigations. If you get a call from someone that Ronan Farrow is writing a story about you, you run and hide.
He's the new Devi and Derek Watts.
He is
terrifying. You need to ignore.
Well, to all these powerful men in America, this guy is he's just the most dangerous person because he'll uncover whatever needs to be uncovered. He's fearless.
Mm.
You know why he's so uptight about – uptight's the wrong word, but why he's so interested in men who behave badly? Because, of course, his mother, Mia Farrow, that whole Woody Allen situation.
Yes.
So that's why, and rightly so. So I have quite a lot of respect for this Ronan Farrow, and I think he's doing a great job.
The Times or the New Yorker? The New York Times or the New Yorker? One of the two.
I don't know which one it is, but he's writing for them, and he does all the investigation. And basically, he's found out that there are more and more of these shitty men who are behaving really badly towards women and have been for years. And one of them is a guy called Les Moonves. Les Moonves was forced to resign on Sunday night after reports of new sexual misconduct and assault accusations. Now, the hard thing about this, he runs a TV network, Les Moonves. He runs CBS. He's a very powerful man in the media. He's been around for years. And these guys on CBS this morning had to talk about their boss resigning, which is always awkward. So here they are, Nora O'Donnell, John Dickerson, and they're talking about the Les Moonves resignation, their own boss. So this is very hard for them to do because they don't know, you know, how that this is going to be taken. Who they're reporting to? Are they going to be in trouble for talking about this? Is it something that's been sanitized? No one knows what to think.
This is really hard. It is. This is hard for everybody at CBS News. I haven't talked about this before because when you think about it, I think the most powerful media executive in America has now resigned in the wake of this Me Too movement, and he's my boss.
Oh,
this is awkward.
Yeah, she is very uncomfortable. You can see it. She's shifting in her chair, and I mean, a horrible thing to have to do.
He was my boss, and so that makes it really hard to comment on it. Les has always treated me fairly and with respect. Still, it's been, for me, it's been another sleepless night thinking about this, the pain that women feel, the courage that it takes for women to come forward and talk about this. And I really didn't know what I was going to say this morning. I needed to say something, so...
Don't say anything.
What's that, Les? He's in my earphones. He's in my head. You know, I've got an earpiece.
Don't talk about me.
Les, I'm in the middle of a live broadcast.
I'll buy you an apartment in Manhattan. Just stop talking about me.
Les, we're in a live news show. You can't do this to me.
By the way, about that, my wife, Julie Chen, you know her from the talk?
Yes.
She's just got your job.
But Les, you're not the boss here anymore.
Oh, honey. You don't know how it works. stop talking about me, all right?
This is so difficult, Les. Mm. Let me try and pick up the broadcast.
I have talked and texted, and I said, you know, Bill, I'm kind of looking back to November when we dealt with accusations against our former co-host.
That's
and
funny.
Gail sort of said, yeah, but, you know, I didn't think we'd still be the story in September.
Oh, you're going to be the
10
story.
10 months later, we're still talking about this. But here's what I said back then, and I think it still holds, and
just
I want to say
talking.
It again. There is no excuse for this alleged behavior. It is systematic and it is pervasive in our culture. And this I know is true to the core of my being. Women cannot achieve equality in the workplace or society until there is a reckoning and a taking of responsibility.
I'm Les Moonves.
So I'm really proud to work here at CBS.
You know, I'm going to fire your ass. We'll see how long you would last at CBS. You think I've resigned? I don't have power there? Huh. I'll take you down.
Les.
Imagine being his wife. I mean, she had to go on the talk, which is like The View. You know, it's the same thing as his four or five women. They sit around a table and talk about whatever's going on in the news. And it must be awkward for her because she's the wife.
Also on CBS, might I add.
Oh, Jesus.
So, yeah.
Now, some of you may be aware of what's been going on in my life for the last few days. Oh. I issued the one and only statement I will ever make on this topic on Twitter. And I will stand by that statement today, tomorrow, forever. Let's get started with...
Can you imagine her getting ready for the show that day?
Ooh.
She's like, who are the other women on the show?
Sharon Osbourne.
Sharon Osbourne.
Yeah.
Sharon, I'm so excited about the show today. We're going to be talking about what's going on with Trump. We're going to be discussing...
Oh, no. You haven't heard yet, Julie?
Is that how Sharon speaks?
I don't know how Sharon talks.
You haven't heard yet? Julie, you haven't heard yet.
No, Sharon, what? Oh, wait, my phone's ringing. It's Les.
Ooh. Hi, Les.
Hey, honey. You getting ready for the show?
Yeah. How are you, honey?
I'm good. I'm just sitting in our huge mansion in the Hamptons. I'll be watching the talk. Speaking of talk, can we talk?
Why, Les? What on earth could be wrong?
Julie, you know that Ronan Farrow guy?
Yes. He's the one with the Me Too movement, Les.
Yeah, well, you're going to be hearing some things.
Les, what are you saying?
This is such an interesting scenario.
I'm going to buy you whatever you want.
Les Moonves, just as a CEO of CBS, heading up one of the biggest channels in the States, undoubtedly is a very powerful man. And Julie Chen, I'm not taking in anything away from her. Yeah. Before all of this, yes, she was a journalist and starting out and doing great things.
Sure.
But getting married to Les really bumped up her career.
Sure, of course.
She landed up as
being her own talk show,
the head anchor on The Talk, and a lot of people season by season on that show come off and are fired, and she's been that one constant all throughout.
Yeah.
And she also hosts Big Brother in the United States, which is also on CBS.
It's nice to be married to Les.
People have been keeping quiet, saying, okay, we aren't going to say anything, but of course Les is pulling some strings. Mm. So now with Les having to step out, people are now saying, well,
Julie's gonna follow.
Is Julie going to fall? So yeah, the new season in American television starts this week, actually. A lot of shows come back from their production breaks, and so The Talk came back this week and Julie hasn't been on.
Oh.
She says that she's been taking some time to spend with her family. But we're like, honey, we know. It's because you don't really know what to say.
Well, I feel sorry for her. I mean, it's not her fault.
It is a very awkward situation to be in. But it seems like Les Moonves is going to be paid out of his contract as CEO of CBS with a cool $120 million. So,
not a bad payday.
Look, he can get $120 million and sit at home. He's fine.
All right, I think you might be interested in this. According to a survey, 13% of American households are wrong about who their father really is.
Wow.
Now, what the Jerry Springer is going on there?
Let me explain. We live in a time now where we can do DNA testing that wasn't available to people 20 years ago. That means that people are doing DNA tests, you know, to figure out, I don't know, which strain they come from, what ancestry they have. Oh, I'm 1/3 Portuguese. Oh, I'm 1/3 African. Oh, I'm 1/3 Jewish. So they're finding out all this stuff, and it's very exciting. What they're also finding out is that their dad isn't their dad, that mom might have lied about who your daddy was.
Direct father or like no predecessors?
Father.
Yo, yo, yo.
13% of American households, according to this survey, may be wrong, about who their father is. Now, isn't that something?
This is awkward.
How sure are you?
Oh, no.
Yeah,
oh, no.
Think about this one. How sure are you that the person who says they're your father is your father?
Imagine finding that out now when you have had zero suspicion at all. Your life has been going well. You think, it would be great to find out if there's a cancer strain in my family. Uh-huh. Or do we come from Colombia or not?
Let me find out. This will be good. I'm really curious. Dad, do you mind giving me a swab of your cheek on this cotton bud so that I can send it into National Geographic and they can check out where we come? Oh, sure, son. No problem.
My father turned out to be
not your father.
I'd be very happy. I'd do that.
Oh, really?
Oh.
You'd be relieved? You'd be relieved, huh?
I really would.
Oh, that's good.
13% is a big number in this instance.
It's 1 in 10. One in every 10 people. And I wonder in South Africa what our statistic might be.
Yeah, take everything that we go through aside.
Right.
How many people are just faking it?
I wonder. So there's something interesting to think about.
Okay, just if you look alike vaguely with your father, be grateful. Mm-hmm. That's at least some sort of confirmation.
Mm-hmm. There's a story about how there's a movie by Prince coming out. Now, I don't know if you've seen these trailers on the internet about the Queen movie, which is coming out soon. Everybody's
so excited about that. I actually watched an interview yesterday about that.
Very excited. I am too. It looks like it's going to be a tremendous movie. When is it out? November?
It is coming out this year sometime. I'm not certain.
Well, who's playing Freddie Mercury in that? He's very good.
Rami Malek.
Yeah, Rami Malek. That's his name.
And do you remember last year, I think we spoke about it when the first bit of news came out and we weren't really sure because the subject matter of the movie was just going to be very fluffy and deal with the music aspect of Freddie's life. But from the trailer that I've watched mm-hmm. and from what we said last year, I'm actually pleasantly surprised. It seems in terms of honoring who Freddie Mercury was and the impact that he made in the music world, I'm impressed. Of course, then we aren't hearing about the cocaine and the midgets serving cocaine and whatnot.
I think that's all part of the story. I want to hear that.
It was part of, back then, that was the thing, though.
The 80s.
Supergroups had super sex parties. And that's the thing. When Queen finished a performance, they were known for having like the most debaucherous parties. That was just it. They always felt duty-bound to just be these guys who just always partied so hard. Like, a night at the Playboy Mansion was nothing compared to a Queen after party.
Mm.
Everybody wanted to be part of it. And everyone was naked, essentially.
Yes, they were all naked.
All just naked.
Naked all the time.
Freddie would have to bum at least 12 guys before midnight. Otherwise, he just knew he was letting everyone down.
One of my favorite stories was Don Henley from the Eagles. Remember Hotel California?
Yeah.
He used
to check out any time, but you can't leave.
Right. He used to line up. It was written in one of their biographies. Used to line up like four or five girls, bend them over, do a line of cocaine off their backs, put it in, make them sing a line from Hotel California,
pull out,
go to the next girl, make her sing the next line, and they loved it. Everybody loved it. They were all over this. It was just a, woo, we're with Don Henley.
Back then, there was no Me Too. That was just jawling back in the days.
Standard procedure.
Yeah, we all think we're so hardcore these days.
In those days, that's rock stars. But then again, people were so like sheltered and they didn't really know too much about stuff. Whereas now, it's like we're all just so precious. Back in those days, everyone rolled the dice.
I'm waiting for Elton John to get to the age where he really doesn't care anymore. And that's when he'll start revealing
things.
There
was a guy who died at an Elton John pool party. He slipped on the paving at the pool and fell in and hit his head or something, and he died at an Elton John pool party.
Elton will have the secret.
Elton will have some stories, let me tell you. I think you're right, that would be a fascinating story to hear. I mean, you listen to this song and you think, what a beautiful song. What a great artist. Forevermore, I want you to think of this song as the song that Don Henley made the girls sing in the dressing room when he did a line and bang them all in a row. Just think about that. So the next time you hear it, it's not going to be, oh, what a great song.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be, I know what he was doing backstage. Sing along with me. Let's change your memory. Let's make a new neural pathway for you this morning, all right? Everybody. A one, a two, a one, two, three, four.
On a dark desert highway.
Yep.
Cool.
Next.
Rising up through the air.
Next.
Up ahead in the distance, I saw a shimmering light. My head grew heavy and my sight grew dim.
Give me a shot.
I had to stop for the night.
Next.
There she stood in the doorway.
Down.
The mission bell.
Down.
And I was thinking to myself, this could be
heaven, or this could be hell. What a song.
Still alive.
Isn't that great? He's still alive. Yeah, he's going strong.
71 years old. The reason why I bring up the Elton John example is, remember that Quincy Jones article from GQ a little while ago where Quincy Jones was just going off?
Oh, he unloaded everything. He told some stories. Great article and a great book, apparently, that's coming.
And it's the thing about old people not really giving a damn.
Yeah, they don't care. Eventually, Jack Nicholson, I think, has told some stories as well. He put out an authorized biography. I don't know if it was an autobiography or whether someone wrote it about him. But there were some great stories because the actors are just as bad as the musicians, right?
Because Paul McCartney's now has reached that stage.
Really? Paul's just letting it all hang out?
Everything out now. Mm-hmm. He is releasing his new album. I don't even know who's listening to it, but he has a new album out, mm-hmm. and he's been doing press tours around it. He's been on Howard Stern, and he's just yapping it up with no control at all.
All right.
He's now famously blaming John Lennon for the split of the Beatles.
Nice.
He says that John was the one who has always been attracted to powerful women. And when Yoko came about, John was so enamored with Yoko that John basically dropped everything and said, screw it, leaving the Beatles, I'm all about this one now. And went off and got married and left. And that's why the Beatles had to actually split up.
Wow. All right. So finally we get the truth out of Paul, because he's been mum about this stuff for years. You know, Paul McCartney's the richest man in music history.
Makes sense.
He's like the only billionaire, I think. I mean, apart from, like, I think Dr. Dre's in there now because of the headphones, but I'm talking about just music. It's great. What a story.
He spoke about how the Beatles used to masturbate together. And I now say,
oh yeah, they were the original guys who started the Soggy Mari. Which is inappropriate, but that was the real meaning behind Yellow Submarine, the song.
Why are you saying all of this?
Yeah, read some history in your time.
All right, well, the reason I brought up the Queen movie and we got into this whole discussion about rock stars is because they found someone to play Prince.
Well, have they?
You tell me.
Have they?
I've read that they have.
Well, that's exactly, Gareth. But now Netflix apparently aren't putting this movie together. It's all false. Bruno Mars, obviously you think, natural thing.
Yeah.
But the movie hasn't been commissioned yet, and it's all kind of hearsay at the moment. I think it's just one of those stories that, obviously as a fact checker for the show, you know, because it's so believable.
It's Ben's official job.
Because it's so believable, it spreads so quickly. So like the Beatles masturbating, that's going to be everywhere. Because it's so believable. Four guys chilling out in their 20s. And so, yeah, Bruno Mars will not be, unless something changes, unless Netflix go ahead with this, but there's been no official come forwards just yet.
Well, I mean, who else could? Prince is a very difficult character to play.
That's what makes this topic so cool, is that there's very few people who could ever get that guy.
You'd have to be very talented to pull that one off. All right, let's go to Greg. Hey, Greg, what's up?
How are you?
Good, man. What's happening?
Nothing much. I'm just phoning in. I haven't spoken to you guys in a bit.
Yeah?
Just about that topic about who's your real father.
Yes.
I know you guys touched on it within a South African context, but I'm sure, there'd be some big surprises, eh?
Damn right. I wonder how many of us would find out that Jacob Zuma was our father.
Oh, he's the father of the nation.
In a very real way.
So I know a girl that I was at varsity with. She introduced us to her sister. Yep. So same father, but their mothers are sisters.
Ooh, what? Wow.
So that uncle pumped the sisters.
These uncles.
That is some nasty.
So hang on, he's there. Ah, wow.
So it's two girls.
Yeah, yeah.
Father.
Yes.
But their mothers
are sisters.
Their mothers are sisters. Yes.
So your aunt is also your stepmother.
Yes. Twice removed per person, Jim.
This is some next level family
chemistry. There's some fuckery. I mean, that's not the only example I know.
Complicated.
Is your father also your uncle in that situation?
Yeah, your father is also your uncle. You know what this reminds me of? When the Bold and the Beautiful, do you remember they used to have those, in the Bold and the Beautiful, they always had those people who, the uncle was also the father, was also the aunt, was, you remember that stuff?
And the role of the father is now played by Gareth.
Yeah, I remember. The role of someone.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. Jesus. That's some Bold and Beautiful shit.
That's some complicated stuff, man.
No, I was confused when they introduced themselves and I found out the whole setup. I was like, who the fuck? How does this work?
Both the same dad. Moms are sisters.
Yeah.
Yo, that's some... It's too close for comfort.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. But I reckon I reckon in a South African context, with all the side chicks and all the stuff happening, there must be some strange family setups. Eh?
Definitely. And we don't even know the half of it, because most people, you know, sometimes, hey, we're always giving fathers a hard time. And, you know, we've got this great new series about fathers. But
I've listened to it, yeah.
What do you think?
No, it's awesome. I've listened to the first episode. Very good. Very well put together.
All right, let me know how you think the rest of it goes, because I'm very proud of that series. All right. But the point I was getting to was, we don't talk about how the women might lie.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of women who they might have had an indiscretion at some point. We all make mistakes, or maybe it was on purpose. Sure. Who knows? And then they don't tell the kids the truth.
Yeah. No, but I mean, in the context of this conversation, I had a chat with my wife the other day. We were just talking about dynamics of families and everything else. I mean, fact of the matter is that if you're a woman, and you're a mother to a child, it's like the relationship is there and the bond is there. So we have a 3-year-old, and fucking you have to build that relationship and be involved. And I mean, they say that men are not, you know, it's difficult to break the stereotype of being a useless man and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
And I mean, you're quite aware of that. But I mean, it's not easy, you know, being a guy providing, fucking trying to sort shit out, and still having to be the father as well. You know, it's actually a lot of pressure as well that we put ourselves under.
Massive.
So, yeah, it's good to listen to those podcasts because it just puts things into context as well.
Well, I'll tell you about it. Thank you very much, man. It's good to talk to you again,
Greg.
All right, ciao,
cheers,
bro.
Guys. Bye-bye. Enjoy the day. Cheers,
you too.
Bye. CliffCentral.com